Chapter 30. Night. There were five of them, three men and two women. They waited outside the door, in a sense, but not near it, grouped a dozen strides away. Waiting, they talked among themselves, two or three talking together, almost shouting, laughing, waving arms, nudging one another. I watched them from the shadows for a time. They could not see me there, or did not, wrapped as I was in my Felogen cloak. And I was able to pretend I did not know what they were. They might have been at a party, all a little drunk. They came eagerly yet hesitantly, afraid of being repulsed and determined to make the advance. One man was taller than I, surely the illegitimate son of some exultant, 50 or more, and nearly as fat as the host at the Inn of Lost Loves. A thin woman of 20 or so walked beside him, almost pressing against him. She had the hungriest eyes I have ever seen. When the fat man stepped in front of me, blocking my way with his bulk, she nearly, yet not quite, embraced me, coming so close it seemed almost magical that we did not touch. Her long-fingered hands moving at the opening of my cloak with the desire to stroke my chest, but never quite doing so, so that I felt I was about to fall prey to some blood-drinking ghost, a succubus or lamia. The others crowded around me, hemming me against the building. "It's tomorrow, isn't it? How does it feel? What's your real name? He's a bad one, isn't he? A monster." None of them waited for answers to their questions, or, so far as I could see, expected or wanted any. They sought propinquity, and the experience of having spoken to me. "Will you break him first? Will there be a branding? Have you ever killed a woman?" "Yes," I said. "Yes, I did, once." One of the men, short and slight, with the high bumpy forehead of an intellectual, was putting an assegai into my hand. "I know you fellows don't get much, and I hear he's a pauper. Can't tip." A woman, gray hair straggling over her face, tried to make me take a lace-trimmed handkerchief. "Get blood on it, as much as you want, or even only a little. I'll pay you afterward." All of them stirred me to pity, even as they revolted me. But one man most of all. He was even smaller than the one who had given me the money, grayer than the gray-haired woman. And there was a madness in his dull eyes, a shadow of some half-suppressed concern that had worn itself out in the prison of his mind until all its eagerness was gone and only its energy remained. He seemed to be waiting until the other four had finished speaking, and since that time clearly would never come, I quieted them with a gesture and asked him what he wanted.
"Master, when I was on the Quasar, I had a paracoida, a doll, you see, a genicon. So beautiful with her great pupils, as dark as wells, her irises purple like asters or pansies blooming in summer. Master, whole beds of them, I thought, had been gathered to make those eyes, that flesh, that always felt sun-warmed. Where is she now? My own Scopolania, my pomet. Let hooks be buried in the hands that took her. Crush them, master, beneath stones. Where has she gone from the lemon wood box I made for her, where she never slept at all? For she lay with me all night, not in the box, the lemon wood box where she waited all day. Watch and watch, master, smiling when I laid her in so she might smile when I drew her out. How soft her hands were, her little hands, like doves. She might have flown with them about the cabin had she not chosen instead to lie with me. Wind their guts about your windlass. Stuff their eyes into their mouths. Unman them. Shave them clean below, so their doxies may not know them, their lemons may rebuke them. Leave them to the brazen laughter of the brazen mouths of strumpets. Work your will upon those guilty. Where was their mercy on the innocent? When did they tremble? When weep? What kind of men could do as they have done? Thieves. False friends. Betrayers. Bad shipmates, no shipmates. Murderers and kidnappers. Without you. Where are their nightmares? Where are their restitutions so long promised? Where are their chains, fetters, manacles, and kings? Where are their abominations that shall leave them blind? Where are the defenestrations that shall break their bones? Where is the estrapod that shall grind their joints? Where is she, the beloved whom I lost? Dorcas had found a daisy for her hair. But as we walked about outside the walls, I wrapped in my cloak so that to anyone more than a few paces off, it must have seemed that she walked alone. It folded its petals in sleep, and she plucked instead one of those white trumpet-shaped blossoms that are called moonflowers, because they appear green in the moon's green light. Neither of us had much to say, other than that we would be utterly alone, save for the other. Our hands spoke of that, clasping each other tightly. Vidalers came and went, for the soldiers were making ready to depart. To north and east the wall hemmed us round, making the wall that enclosed the barracks and administrative buildings seem no more than children's work, a wall of sand that might be trodden down by accident. To south and west extended the sanguinary field. We heard the trumpet blown there, and the cries of the new monomachists who sought their foes. Both of us, I think, for a time, dreaded that the other would suggest we walk there and watch the combats. Neither did. When the last curfew had come drifting down from the wall, we returned, with a borrowed candle, to our windowless and fireless room. There was no bolt for the door, but we put the table against it and stood the candlestick on that. I had told Dorcas she was free to go, and that forever afterward it would be said of her that she was a torturer's woman, who gave herself under the scaffold for money spotted with blood. She had said, "That money has clothed and fed me." Now she drew off the brown mantle which hung to her heels and beyond when she was not careful of it, so the hem dragged in the dust, and smoothed the raw, yellow-brown linen of her simar. I asked if she were frightened. "Yes," she said. Then quickly, "Oh, not of you." "Of what, then?" I was taking off my clothes. If she had asked me, I would not have touched her throughout the night. But I wanted her to ask. Indeed, I wanted her to beg. And the pleasure I would have had in abstinence would then have been at least as great, as I thought, as I would have had in possession, with the additional pleasure of knowing that on the next night she would feel the more obliged because I had spared her.
"Of myself. Of what thoughts may return to me when I lie again with a man?"
"Again? Do you remember a time before?" Dorcas shook her head.
"But I am certain I am no virgin. I have desired you often, yesterday and today. For whom did you believe I washed myself? Last night I held your hand while you slept, and I dreamed we sated ourselves and lay in each other's arms. But I know satiety as well as desire. So I have known one man at least. Do you wish me to remove this before I blow out the candle? She was slender, high-breasted, and narrow-hipped, strangely childlike to me, though fully a woman. You seem so small, I said, and held her to me. And you are so big. I knew then that however much I tried not to, I would hurt her, that night and afterward. I knew, too, that I was incapable of sparing her. A moment before, I would have refrained if she had asked. Now, I could not. And just as I would have thrust forward, though it had plunged my body on a spike, I would follow her later and try to cleave her to me. But it was not my body that was impaled, but hers. We had been standing while I ran my hands over her and kissed her breasts, that were like round fruit sliced in two. Now I lifted her, and together we fell on one of the beds. She cried out, half in delight, half in pain, and pushed me away before she clutched at me. I'm glad, she said. I'm so glad, and bit me on the shoulder. Her body bent backward like a bow. Later we pushed the beds together so we could lie side by side. Everything was slower the second time. She would not agree to a third.
You'll need your strength tomorrow, she said.
Then you don't care.
If we could have our way, no man would have to go roving or draw blood. But women did not make the world. All of you are torturers, one way or another.
It rained that night, so hard we could hear it drumming on the tiles over our heads, a cleansing, crashing, unending downpour of water. I dozed and dreamed that the world had been turned upside down. Guile was overhead now, decanting all its flood of fish and filth and flowers over us. I saw the great face I had seen under the water when I had nearly drowned, a portent of coral and white seen in the sky, smiling with needle teeth. Thrax is called the city of windowless rooms. This windowless room of ours, I thought, is a preparation for Thrax. Thrax will be like this. Or perhaps Dorcas and I are already there. It was not so far north as I thought. So far north as I was led to believe. Dorcas got up to go out, and I went with her, knowing it would not be safe for her to go alone at night in a place where there were so many soldiers. The corridor outside our room ran along an outer wall, pierced with embrasures. Water splashed through each in a fine spray. I wanted to keep Terminus Est in her sheath, but so large a sword is slow to draw. When we were back in our room again, with the table against the door, I took out the whetstone and sharpened the man side of the blade, honing its edge unto the endmost third, the part I would use, would divide a thread tossed into the air. Then I wiped and oiled the whole blade and stood the sword against the wall near my head. Tomorrow would be my first appearance on the scaffold, unless the Kiliarch decided at the last moment to exercise clemency. That was always a possibility, always a risk. History shows that every age has some unquestioned neurosis. And Master Palaemon had taught me that clemency is ours, a way of saying that one less one is more than nothing. That since human law need not be self-consistent, justice need not be so either. There is a dialogue in the Brown Book somewhere between two mists,
in which one argues that culture was an outgrowth of the vision of the increate as logical and just, bound by interior consistency to fulfill his promises and threats. If that was the case, I thought, surely we will perish now, and the invasion from the north that so many have died to resist is no more than the wind that topples a tree already rotten. Justice is a high thing. And that night, when I lay beside Dorcas listening to the rain, I was young, so that I desired high things only. That, I think, was why I so desired that our guild regain the position and regard it had once possessed. And I still desired that, even then, when I had been cast out of it. Perhaps it was for the same reason that the love of living things, which I had felt so strongly as a child, had declined until it was hardly more than a memory when I found poor Triskull bleeding outside the Bear Tower. Life, after all, is not a high thing, and in many ways is the reverse of purity. I am wise now, if not much older, and I know it is better to have all things, high and low, than to have the high only. Unless the Kiliarch decided then to grant clemency, tomorrow I would take Agilis's life. No one can say what that means. The body is a colony of cells. I used to think of our oubliette when Master Palaemon said that. Divided into two major parts, it perishes. But there is no reason to mourn the destruction of a colony of cells. Such a colony dies each time a loaf of bread goes into the oven. If a man is no more than such a colony, a man is nothing. But we know instinctively that a man is more. What happens then to that part that is more? It may be that it perishes as well, though more slowly. There are a great many haunted buildings, tunnels, and bridges. Yet I have heard that in those cases in which the spirit is that of a human being and not an elemental, its appearances grow less and less frequent, and at last cease. Historiographers say that in the remote past, men knew only this one world of earth, and had no fear of such beasts as were on it then, and traveled freely from this continent to the north. But no one has ever seen even the ghosts of such men. It may be that it perishes at once, or that it wanders among the constellations. This earth surely is less than a village in the immensity of the universe. And if a man lives in a village and his neighbors burn his house, he leaves the place if he does not die in it. But then we must ask how he came. Master Gerlos, who has performed a great many executions, used to say that only a fool worried about making some failure of ritual, slipping in the blood, or failing to perceive that the client wore a wig and attempting to lift the head by the hair. The greater dangers were a loss of nerve that would make one's arms tremble and give an awkward blow, and a feeling of vindictiveness that would transform the act of justice into mere revenge. Before I slept again, I tried to steel myself against both.